From the studios of NPR West, this is Day to Day. I'm Alex Cohen. Coming up on the program, 1 year ago today, oil was $100 a barrel. A look at where prices might be headed in 2009 later in the program. But first, 17 days. That's how much time George Walker Bush has remaining in office. Today, we look at his legacy.
I, George Walker Bush,
do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten
my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed. No president wants war. Everything you may have heard is that, but it's just simply not true.
And the facts are that we had 52 months of uninterrupted job growth, the longest in the history of the United States.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
If someone committed a crime, they will no longer work in my administration.
We are seizing the initiative from the enemy, and that the troop surge is working.
We are in the midst of a serious financial crisis, and the federal government is responding with decisive action.
President George W. Bush over the past 8 years. Over the next few weeks, we'll look at both the successes and failures of the Bush administration. We begin today with Darren Shaw. He teaches political science at the University of Texas at Austin. He also served on both Bush-Cheney campaigns. Shaw says to understand his legacy, you need to look all the way back to 2001, when George W. Bush first took office.
The president was very focused on tax cuts, obviously, and on reforming the education system. And there's a bit of irony there because he was a Republican president who came in with very, very significant aspirations to increase the level of federal control or involvement in the setting of standards in the educational system.
Looking over these past 8 years, what kind of legacy do you think he actually does leave behind?
Boy, that's a tough question. In political science, we're a little different from historians. What we tend to do is to focus on, when we evaluate presidents, the extent to which they articulate an agenda, get that agenda passed into legislation, follow through on those public policy commitments and statutes and laws that are enacted. And so, you know, for instance, there may be people who have public policy differences with a president like Franklin Roosevelt or more recently Ronald Reagan, but amongst political scientists, they're regarded as very, very effective, good presidents because they meet these sort of objective criteria. You may not like what Roosevelt did, but you know nobody argues that he didn't articulate a vision, that he didn't get that vision passed into law and then follow through on it. It's very hard to sort of think of Bush in those terms. I mean, even using those objective criteria, there's a lot of subjective room for appraisal. You know, early on, he had the tax cuts, he had No Child Left Behind, a controversial but he got it passed, prescription drug plan, reorganization of Homeland Security. But then as you move to the second administration, the two major legislative initiatives, Social Security reform, which was dead on arrival, and immigration reform went nowhere. So it's very mixed even in those terms, setting aside issues like the Iraq War, the war in Afghanistan, questions of expansion of executive authority. I think those things are going to take years, maybe decades, to sort of settle. It's going to take a lot of time. There are people now who can't stand those things and are ready to throw dirt on the grave of the Bush administration, both Bush 1 and Bush 2. I mean, I'm not so sure. I'm just not as convinced that the record is as open and shut as some people seem to think it is at this point.
In the final months of his administration, of course, one of the biggest stories has been the economy, which right now is looking incredibly grim here in the U.S. To what extent do you think that President Bush should be held accountable for that?
Well, presidents are held accountable, whether it's fair or not. I think my sense is that in some ways presidents are overrated with respect to their ability to impact the economy. But boy, when the economy went south, he's just going to get it. Now, is that fair? In many ways, I think it probably is. I mean, as a free market guy and someone who wasn't terribly interested in regulation, a lot of the absence of regulatory policies over some of these Wall Street firms is, you know, it's pretty easy to say, well, look, he did nothing. This was the fundamental problem, lack of oversight, lack of regulation. You know, ergo, Bush was, if not, you know, culpable. Certainly, you know, it happened on his watch. He didn't do anything to stop it. That doesn't strike me as being terribly unfair. you could argue, I think, and as someone who was involved in the Bush campaign in 00 and 04, that he got pretty unlucky in a lot of ways. But, yeah, ultimately, he's going to bear that responsibility. And that's why I think, you know, the President Bush is never going to rise to the level of the great or even near great presidents, even if, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq are flourishing democracies in 50 years. I think that economic legacy is just going to cripple his ability to sort of resurrect his legacy.
Supporters of the president and the president himself have pointed out to the fact that since September 11th, 2001, there have been no terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. Is that something that can be rightly used as indication of his strengths?
I mean, for my money, I think it's as fair as some of the other things are unfair. In other words, one of the things you do with presidents is you play a what-if game. And historians, of course, have written books on this. And if you hold the president accountable for the economy, I think it's reasonable to take, you know, what you have right now, which is the absence of any attacks on the U.S. homeland over this period of time, and give him credit for that. Is it possible that would have happened without Bush, or that a better policy would have achieved the same effect? Maybe, but we don't know.
If you don't mind my asking a personal question, you worked for his campaign. What do you make of the past 8 years?
It's very difficult from a personal perspective to get a handle on this. I have a lot of friends, and I teach here in Austin, obviously, but I have a lot of friends back in Los Angeles in particular, and by and large, they're extremely negative towards the president, and some of them are pretty aggressive. How could you work for this guy? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? And I guess I had confidence in the president. I think that some of the things that happened were absolutely his fault. I don't think he was served well by a lot of people in his administration. In fact, I would make the argument that one of the real problems was a misguided sense of loyalty. There were certain people who, in retrospect, were clearly not loyal to the president, whom he rewarded with service opportunities beyond the time they should have gone. Politically, it was kind of stunning how things deteriorated, I think. In terms of substantive policy, I understood some of the problems at the times with the policy. I supported them. Some of them have not worked out, and you bear culpability for that. And, you know, they make for a lot of second-guessing. But I think at a personal level, this is an honorable man. This is a man who did the best he could. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a much more complex presidency than people, I think, appreciate right now.
Darren Shaw teaches political science at the University of Texas in Austin. Thank you.
Thank you.
When George W. Bush leaves the White House, he and his wife, Laura, will return to Dallas. That's where they lived before he was elected governor of Texas in 1994. It's also where the Bush Library will eventually be built. For more on their future, we're joined now by Colleen McCain-Nelson of the Dallas Morning News. She joins us from Dallas. And Colleen, there have been rumors that the president wanted to retire to the ranch in Crawford, but it was Mrs. Bush who was very insistent about Dallas. What have you heard about their decision?
The president has said that he's no longer the decider in chief, and that he had made the decision to have the ranch kind of be their getaway while he was in the White House. But Laura has long wanted to come back to Dallas. She went to Southern Methodist University, where the library will be, and has been eager to return to the neighborhood where they lived before heading to the governor's mansion.
They're expected to move into a four-bedroom house. That seems rather modest after living at 1600 Pennsylvania Ave.
It's definitely downsizing for them. I've actually seen the house, and it doesn't stand out from other houses in the neighborhood. In fact, compared to some of the mansions in the neighborhood where they'll be living, it is pretty low-key and fairly modest. It's a ranch house. It was built in 1959, and so driving by it, it's not going to wow you, and you're not going to think, well, a former commander-in-chief must live there.
How are the people of Dallas feeling about the Bushes moving back into the neighborhood?
Well, it's a mixed reaction. You don't see either rioting in the streets nor a hero's parade welcoming him back. There's kind of some in between, where I would say the neighborhood he's returning to is fairly friendly confines. This is the same neighborhood where they lived previously, so they have some old friends in the neighborhood, and it is a Republican neighborhood, kind of old money, and so that will be comfortable for them. But there certainly are folks in Dallas who are not excited about the president living here, whether they simply disagree with his politics or the other concerns that I've heard from folks are traffic and terrorists, and just wondering whether having a former president here could It could tie up traffic and also make Dallas a target. And we've also seen protests both at SMU and within the Methodist Church about bringing the library here. So it's an interesting mix of reactions. But as you drive around the neighborhood where they'll be living, you're already seeing some yard signs pop up that say, "Welcome home, W." So the neighborhood itself is trying to give him a warm welcome.
Colleen, I'd like to ask you about something you just mentioned. The George W. Bush Library will be built at Southern Methodist University. It likely won't begin being built for another 2 years, but you mentioned there's been some protests. What's the issue there?
Well, there are concerns about whether this will be kind of a partisan institute. There's going to be both a library and a museum, and then they're also building a separate policy institute at SMU. And professors at SMU have raised concerns about whether this is going to be a legitimate scholarly institution and have said perhaps this would just be a kind of a purveyor of partisan propaganda and not something that would beef up kind of the academic credentials of the university. And so there are concerns about that, and I think people will be watching closely to see what types of folks they hire to lead that institute and what their political leanings are.
As I understand, there were also some concerns that the president's involvement in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan might not be in harmony with Southern Methodist University's philosophy as a Methodist university. What were the thoughts there?
Folks at the university did express concerns about the war and have protested the war and said that they didn't agree with many of the president's policies and didn't agree with the decision to go to war and the way that the wars have been carried out. And so that has contributed to the protests within the university and within the church. And also folks within the church have just questioned whether having a partisan institute or an institute with a particular ideology is appropriate for a religious institution.
Colleen McCain-Nelson of the Dallas Morning News, thank you.
Thank you so much.